here. He's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
Not billiards. It was. Come on, Rick. What? Come on. We call it the
place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
The real man that is in the New York groove is Carmelo Anthony, who scored 27 points for his New York Knicks team that he just joined tonight for the first time, defeating Milwaukee. And that's what we're here to talk about tonight on the Place to Be podcast. I am Justin Rosero. Alongside me, as always, is my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, Justin. Pleasure to hear from you, as always.
Of course. And also on the line is our buddy, Matt Rotella. And hopefully he's awake tonight. Matt, how you doing?
Doing good. Hopefully I can kick this head cold soon.
Hopefully, and if not, we'll kick you in the head. And also joining us is our good friend from the Blog of Doom, which we haven't really talked about on these podcasts, but we do need to start plugging that site, and that is Andrew Reich, and he is our NBA expert. He'll be joining us throughout the season, and also will be part of our big March Madness podcast that's coming. Andrew, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, Scott. Oh, wait, Justin.
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
I already did it.
All right, that's okay. So anyway, hi, Andrew, how are you? See, I just flowed right in and it worked fine.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to everybody over there at the Cruise World Order.
Really yes, people. Yes.
Yes.
They, let's plug that now so we don't forget later. Blog of Doom was an offshoot of Scott Keith. He's an internet wrestling personality, and we kind of split off from him, I think it was 2005 now, so we've been going for a while here at the Blog of Doom. It's rspwfa2.livejournal.com. It's tons of conversation, tons of topics. We have reviews, Wrestler of the Week, which is great, the Wednesday Walk Around the Web, which is pretty much one of the best columns anywhere, where our buddy Glenn kind of goes and hits some obscure links from the world of the internet and posts them on there. We have the Film Fiesta every Friday, so there's a lot going on there. Check it out. A lot of cool personalities like our boy Andrew. A lot of diverse personalities as well. So.
A lot of columnists from 411 Mania also regularly post on there.
Yes, yep, that's another highlight, because you don't have to filter through their site. You can just get it right at ours.
Yes.
So with that said, let's get what we're here to talk about tonight, and that is the first half of the NBA season. We're going to kind of backtrack, look at that. We're going to hit up some of the big trades that happened recently, and then we're going to go ahead and give some predictions from the four of us as to where we think things are headed. So let's backtrack a bit. Matt's going to kind of lead that, and we're going to talk about what's happened so far in the first half this year. So, Matt, do you want to kind of set that up?
Sure thing. This season, like many other seasons, has been great. NBA basketball. The surprise team, probably for me, because I never predicted them to be this high, have been the Spurs. They are the best record in the NBA right now. They're 47-10, and they don't seem to be slowing up, but they're one of the oldest teams in the NBA, so there's a good chance that they're going to be slipping back down, sort of like Boston did last year, and I can't expect Boston to also be slipping back into that same role. I hope not, but they're not getting any younger. And Miami, who started off at a very slow start after everyone predicted them to be the greatest team around.
Yeah, they definitely did get off to a slow start, you're right, but they've definitely turned it around.
They have come full circle and are fully kicking into high gear, though they still can't beat the Celtics.
He had to get that into the end.
I had to.
I smell a Bostonian.
Oh, yes. Are you a Miami fan?
No. I'm actually a Phil Jackson fan, if anything. But I'm a fan of all basketball. I prefer the LA Lakers. But I'm a fan of all the teams. I'm a fan of good basketball. That's why I can't watch the Pistons.
Yes, they've been playing awful basketball for about a decade now. That's for sure.
Maybe a little less than that. In fact, in my opinion, by the way, Andrew, I am a Laker fan as well.
Oh, God. This is going to be horrible.
It's a handicap match. Whose side is Justin on?
He's a Celtic fan too, so it's 2-on-2.
Oh, great. It's not like the video game.
But I'm not a diehard Celtics fan. I can be swayed. I became a Celtics fan when they drafted Ryan Gomes. That was the main reason I jumped on. And I got on right before the championships.
So now you're a huge Minnesota Timberwolves fan, correct?
Actually, he's on the Clippers now.
He's on the Clippers now.
He's going to the West Coast now.
They're playing my boys right now.
Yes, I saw that. It's on ESPN right now.
Yeah, I don't know why they're playing a game at 9:30 at night in New Orleans, but okay.
That's weird. You know what, Andrew? We kind of didn't do that. Why don't you just give us a quick background, you know, where you reside and just kind of, you know, how you got into basketball and a little bit of your background.
Well, I never played basketball. I'm 5'7" in sneakers. So, you know, I just enjoyed it. When I grew up, the first game I ever saw was game one of the NBA Finals when Magic Johnson hit a three, and Michael actually missed a game-winning shot. That was the first major NBA basketball game I ever saw. I liked the Chicago Bulls, not because they were the dominant team, but because my brother was a huge Chicago Cubs fan, and we watched a lot of WGN television, and we constantly saw the Bulls, just like we saw the Atlanta Braves on TBS, especially given that I was a wrestling fan.
Right.
And I watched WCW Saturday Night, Clash of the Champions, and with Turner controlling the Braves, you could not help but get away from the Atlanta Braves. So, you know, there were many a day where I would watch the Atlanta Braves, and I remember crying. The first time I ever cried for a sporting event was when they lost to the Twins and Jack Morris. I said Zach Morris.
Yeah, that's awesome. Man,
Zach Morris was a good pitcher at Bayside, but he just couldn't make it out of Class A. But Jack Morris pitched 10 innings and won that game for the Twins, and I cried in my dad's bed. Oh yeah. My God, the Braves, they're America's team. But
and they really were. They really were America's team. And, you know, because even up here in Rhode Island, we, like you said, get to those games on TBS, and they did become, you know, obviously I hated the Red Sox, so I tried to avoid them at all costs. And as a Yankee fan, we got WPIX growing up, but, you know, we didn't get all the games. But TBS, you know, you're seeing all those Braves games, you definitely do become very, very familiar with them.
There was a 2-year stretch there where you do the grade school Who's Your Hero, and I constantly wrote Francisco Cabrera, even though I couldn't spell it. But I enjoy basketball. I love it. I went to the University of New Orleans, which had a run under Tim Floyd in the early 90s, but they actually got downgraded down to Division III. So I don't really have a dog in the fight from a college perspective. I love LSU, but, you know, I can be swayed. NBA, I enjoy it. I think the talent level in the NBA right now is at the highest it's been in about 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the talent level in the end, you see, some of these people are on the phone on these interviews right now, and they're saying, well, we have to be concerned about the migration of the players, of the superstars to the higher class clubs because there aren't that many superstars. That might be true, but I think that the star level, even below whatever you would consider a superstar status, is pretty deep. And I saw the FIBA games in the summer, and I saw some pretty damn good players, and none of them were on the Redeem team.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that the level play in the NBA is very high. And even though that's not the reason that the ratings are up, the reason the ratings are up is because of the Miami Heat and the assembly of all these super teams creating interest in the marquee matchups. I do think that that there are still good teams out there for smaller markets, and there's just a lot of concern with this Carmelo Anthony trade and the Deron Williams trade to New York or New Jersey going into Brooklyn, that these bigger market clubs are going to swallow up any elite all-star level player on a smaller market like Utah, New Orleans, Golden State, such and such, to the point that all of the smaller market teams become either irrelevant or just plain shit bad. And all of the elite status clubs that are gathering all these stars, like the Knicks and the Heat and the Celtics and the Lakers, are going to stabilize at the top. And it won't even be a glass ceiling. It'll be a Fort Knox ceiling.
I think that is a major concern. But when you look at it, really only takes one guy to kind of change that. And yeah. I think that's happening for the Nets now. If Deron Williams, I know he's saying he's a little pissed off at the trade, but if he ends up staying there and signing and then maybe he can convince Dwight Howard to come, yeah, that's a big market, but that's also a team that's, been just awful, dreg of a team for so long outside of that, you know, few year stretch earlier this decade.
Yes, they have.
So, you know, sometimes all it takes is that one guy to go to a team to really turn it around.
Exactly. And I saw that, and I'll tell you two stories that come from the same draft. And, And I can even give you one that made a terrible mistake in the 2005 draft. You had the number two team in the on the board was the Hawks. The number three team on the board was the Portland Trailblazers, and the number four team was the New Orleans Hornets. The Hornets had just lost their superstar player Baron Davis. He bullshitted his way out of the team by not playing hard and demanding to be traded and doing all the wrong things that, you know, you would expect out of a superstar from the 90s, like Allen Iverson or Stephon Marbury, you know, wham, wham, get me out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went to the crapper. The Jazz weren't really that good. And the Blazers were terrible because they couldn't stop sexually harassing babysitters. But what happened in that draft is that you had the opportunity to make your picks, because what happened is the Blazers traded that pick away for whatever scenario. I can't remember what it is, but they traded it to the Jazz, and the Hawks stood on their number two pick. They picked Marvin Williams out of North Carolina. The Jazz took Darren Williams, and the Hornets took Chris Paul. And this is the same scenario that the Jazz and even the Denver Nuggets are.
Andrew, you there?
Where'd he go?
I think we lost him. Matt, you there?
I'm here. There were several times where he was breaking out.
Yeah, we lost the connection. I will, why don't you guys talk about your surprise teams? I'm going to work on getting Andrew back on the line here.
Of course. All right. At least for the first half of the season, for me, I think the team that actually surprised me the most, in a good way, is the Pacers. They're in the chase. Only four games under 500. They've played pretty well top to bottom. They play pretty good solid defense. They've hung around against the good teams. I'm pretty happy with what Indiana's been. Team I'm most disappointed in. It's tough in the Eastern Conference because every team below eight is pretty awful, and we all know they're pretty awful. In the West, probably Phoenix. I would have thought that the Suns would have been a lot better. I didn't think that losing Amare would have made that big a difference, but they're sitting at 500. They're 2.5 games right now out of the eighth spot in the Western Conference playoff race. So I'm a little disappointed that Phoenix is not as good as they are. Team I'm most surprised with in the West this year is Portland. Trailblazers are fifth in the conference right now, and they're getting a lot of play out of their guards. And they're actually playing the Lakers tonight, right now, as we're talking. LaMarcus Aldridge is having a good year. Camby, the guy's ageless. He's leading the team. He's got almost 11 rebounds a game. They got a lot of experience on that team. Andre Miller. They're a team that could sneak up on somebody in the playoffs if they're not prepared for them. So those are my surprises so far this season.
My two surprises are a bit different than yours. My big surprise in the West would have to be Memphis. They're 32-27. This is a team that has been nowhere for the last decade. You could even find them on the radar, let alone above 500 where they stand now. But they have a lot of young talent. Kevin Love, I believe, is there. Or is that Minnesota?
Kevin Love's in Minnesota.
Yeah, I messed up. But Rudy Gay is one of the best. I'm going to be a very good player down there. He's one of the best players. And Marc Gasol, just like his brother, is playing up to expectations over there.
Zach Randolph.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, I'm so sorry about that. My laptop went haywire.
It's okay. I'm going to add you. Hang on.
Okay.
No, there is just some interest in him.
Yeah.
But in the East, you have to go with the Knicks.
All right, guys. I just want to cut in quick. I think we got Andrew back on the line here.
Hey, okay. Guys, I'm really sorry about that. I got cut off midstream, you know.
We heard a lot of gurgling, and it's yeah. Pretty funny.
We were just hoping you were okay over there.
Yeah, we heard something about Chris Paul, and you vanished. So. I don't know if the collective bargaining agreement ate you, or I don't know what's going on there. But.
I wish it did. I felt like Kurt Angle in SummerSlam 2000. I'm just like, where am I? You know? But I'm in the main event, but I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to do. But no, seriously, I'm so sorry about that. But no, my basic point was that one player, just like Justin was saying, one player can make all the difference. And if it comes through the draft and it's from the draft picks that you inherit and you're a terrible team for just a 2-year stretch and you get in the lottery, then that's the way you can earn your way back in. It's not like these players that are going up to these larger markets are going to stay good forever.
Right.
Look, LeBron James can't live forever, even though the steroids are trying to make him. But these guys are going to dissipate. The Boston Celtics, you can already see the age wearing down. I'm watching Shaquille O'Neal. Mm-hmm. The dude can't even run past midcourt without heaving. You know, I mean, it's just to the point where you know that these guys are going to slow down. And then there's going to be a new uprising of better players in the smaller markets. They're just afraid that the cycle will continue, and guys like Dwight Howard and Stephen Curry and Tyreek Evans, they're just going to ask out of whatever place they are at because they know they're not going to win there.
Right. Well, a team like Utah can, you know, kind of rejuvenate themselves if they can pick up Jimmy Fredette in the draft, a hometown hero, and I think immediately kind of make those fans maybe not as upset over the Darren Williams trade. But let's get back. When you dropped off, Andrew, we kind of moved on. Matt and Scott started talking about disappointment and surprise teams. Matt mentioned Memphis as his surprise team. Scott mentioned Phoenix as his disappointment team. And that's kind of where I dropped out to pick you up. So what were you guys discussing right when we came back on?
Well, I was just about to say that my Eastern surprise team was the Knicks. Even before they got Carmelo, they were still hanging in there. Yeah, I didn't even expect them to be above 500 at this point, yet here they are 3 games above, and I wouldn't be surprised if they come in as the 5th seed into the playoffs now.
Well, something too, though, I've seen a lot of Knicks fans kind of complaining about is the way Mike D'Antoni has kind of run Mario Stoudemire into the ground. You know, this is a guy with a bad knee on a long-term deal, and I guess there was one game where they played overtime, and he played like 46 minutes or something, ridiculous. 48 minutes, and since that game, his production has actually dipped. So you wonder now that they have Carmelo if they can kind of ease up on him a little bit before they hit the playoffs.
But who's to say that it wasn't Amari who was asking for the playing time?
Yeah, but regardless, if you're the coach, you still got to say, you know, you got to slow down. This is a guy with microfracture surgery history, you know, and all of a sudden you're relying on him to play, you know, almost 40 minutes a night, 35 to 40 minutes a night. To carry this team, and he's done it. I mean, he's been a star. He's more than earned the money they're paying him, and he helped transform that team.
The one thing I'll say for Amari Stoudemire, he had a pretty weird ESPN the magazine photo shoot, but you could just tell by his frame and by the way he walks and the way he runs, the dude is built like a horse.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Shaq. He's not a guy that has to play himself into shape. He's not Vin Baker, who's going to eat half of a McDonald's.
And drink the rest of it.
And drink the rest of it. Amari Stoudemire is chiseled out of granite. I mean, his knee did get microfracture, but even past the microfracture, the guy has put up beast numbers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he's done it at a high rate. Even after D'Antoni left, they still went with that 7 seconds or less offense in Phoenix, and he was still chugging out the numbers. That is a concern that he does log in a lot of minutes, you know. That the real question now with the Knicks is, you got Mike D'Antoni in 2008 or 2009 because you wanted to lure in these superstars like LeBron James and Dwayne Wade potentially to play in a high-tempo offense where they could get up and down and they could kind of show off their stats at Madison Square Garden. Here's the problem for D'Antoni. Okay, you got your two superstars. Now let's see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he's the coach of the future. And they will freak out if they peter out in the playoffs and they feel like they're not going anywhere with that offense.
I don't think they're going to go too far in the playoffs, at least this year.
They're not.
They trade away half their bench.
Yeah.
And I don't care who they try to pick up, be it Ira Bowman, Mike Wilkes, whoever the heck is in the NBDL anymore. But no one's going to get them. They might get by the first round, but they're going to tie around in the second.
Looking at it, though, I don't know who they could even beat in the first round where they're at. Unless they can get to the four and hope Atlanta stays ahead of Orlando, and then maybe they get Atlanta that first round.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I think they're stuck at the six, and mm-hmm. this is why. Atlanta is a team that is consistently inconsistent. They'll have a stretch where they'll win four in a row, they look great, and then they'll have a game like they did against the Lakers last night where they just look like absolute crap, and they get blown to bits. Here's the key. In the month of March, they play only 3 road games.
Mm-hmm.
So if they just hold their own at home, they should stay in that 4-5 area. I don't think the Bulls, Heat, and Celtics are going anywhere.
No, definitely
think they're,
not.
I think they're set. And I think that the Bulls can actually, if they set their mind right, I think they can make a run to the one spot if the Celtics start to slow down late in the year, which I kind of expect. And if Miami kind of does what they've been doing all year, where they play great defense, but their offense doesn't really know what it has to do late in games. And they kind of do isolation stuff for Wade and James. And it just doesn't, it seems like they're playing me first.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that here's the real intrigue for me. The real intrigue for me is who is going to wind up at the 3. Because if you're at the 3 spot, you're going to have to play New York.
Right.
And that's going to be interesting. It could be any of those 3. I could see Miami and Chicago getting ahead of Boston. That's my most intriguing one. And the teams that are in the 7 and 8, and that's why I say they're stuck at the 6 spot. The 7 and 8 teams are garbage. Now, yeah. I don't want to terribly make fun of Philadelphia, because I think Doug Collins is the coach of the year.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
That team was not that great, and they're still not that great, and he's making them work as hard as they possibly can, but they're a mediocre team. And the last spot is going to belong to either Indiana or Charlotte, and they're bad.
Yeah, they're also Rans, and they're there because the bottom of the East is so weak.
Exactly.
So here's an idea. Let's actually kind of an interesting point is thought of as we're going over this. Start with Scott in this one. If you're the Celtics, do you kind of take your foot off the pedal a little bit with these older guys and maybe pull it in over the last month? Or do you keep going full throttle, try and get that first seed? Because I know last year they felt that maybe not having home court in that last game with the Lakers could have cost them. I don't think there's any chance they're going to catch the Spurs this year, but it's still something they would want maybe as that one seed. If that was you, do you, you know, go for that one seed, or knowing the age of your team, do you pull back a little bit knowing you have a playoff spot?
Well, in my opinion, the problem the Celtics had in Game 7 was not the fact they weren't home. It was the fact they didn't have Kendrick Perkins. I think if that game was in Boston without Kendrick Perkins, I don't say the Lakers were still going to win, but I wouldn't say it was a guarantee for the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, do they still have that big comeback on the road? You know, it's a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Who knows, but they probably would have helped.
I honestly disagree.
What? What do you mean you disagree?
About Perkins' injury. If Perkins had played, that they had won. I don't think that would have happened. Because if Perkins had not gotten hurt, you wouldn't have gotten the effort out of Rasheed Wallace in the 7th game. The only reason they were still in that game was Rasheed Wallace. He would have barely played if Perkins had been in.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what effort Perkins would give you. Perkins is renowned for kind of half-assing it. So
I think what won that game for the Lakers, I know we're going off the path, but I'll get to the Celtics in a minute. I think what won that game for the Lakers was Kobe changing his role in the second half, because he couldn't put the ball in the ocean in the first half. So
he was
instead
terrible.
He ended up he put in what, he had like 14 rebounds in that game, and they came back and won. But anyway, answering Justin's question, the problem the Celtics have right now is they have a depth problem. They don't have Marquise Daniels for the rest of the season. You're hit or miss with Shaq, at least for the next couple weeks. I think if you're the Celtics, I don't want to say you coast, but I would probably, at least if I were Doc, I would be very gentle with the roster from here on out in terms of minutes. Try to be as balanced with the minutes as possible. The Heat are not unbeatable, and we've seen that. They're playing really good right now, but the Heat have those games. Dwayne Wade's got a kind of a gimpy ankle right now, and so you know. I think if I was a Celtics, I would probably at least – I wouldn't say coast, kind of in the middle. I would say put it on cruise, but a little faster than the speed limit, because I think they need to keep up with the Heat, but at the same time, the lack of depth off the bench, the Heat may end up passing them anyway. I think a 2 seed for the Celtics will be fine, to be honest with you.
And now
if the Heat pass them, the Heat pass them. But I think the Celtics are fine, because right now the Celtics the Celtics are in the Heat's head. The Celtics just have a better game plan. They play more physical at the defensive end, and if they force all these jumpers on Wade and LeBron like they did the last time they played in Boston, they could beat the Heat. So I think that if the Celtics, you know, kind of coast, but not too slow. I mean, keep playing hard, but balance the minutes out. I think they'll be okay. I think if they drop to a 2 seed, they'll be fine.
And there are rumors that they are looking to trade. They're running out of time on this, but looking to maybe get Shane Battier. to help solidify the middle. And also, they may be in on Troy Murphy, who I guess is going to be released by, I think he's, is he with Utah? I think that was part of the trade, right?
Murphy got traded to the Warriors.
That's
yeah.
right, to Golden
yeah.
State. Okay, so I think they're going to cut him. So it's just thought it might be on him. There's also rumors that they're looking to maybe trade Nate Robinson, not the pitcher for the Tigers, but Nate Robinson. I think it might have been to Golden State. I thought that's the rumor I saw. So I think as long as, like Andrew was mentioned, as long as they stay out of that three spot and kind of stay away from the Knicks, who could maybe not win, but maybe push them to 6 or 7 games and add some extra tread to the tires, whereas opposed to playing Philly or Indiana, I think, you know, the top two spots are where you want to be. Matt, do you kind of agree with that?
I agree. I mean, they did come down to earth a lot last year, but you saw the age coming into effect. I think it's going to show again this year. They're not, as I said earlier, they're not going to get any younger. Their knees are just going to start crumbling on them. But I would be happy with a second seed or a third. It doesn't matter to me. As long as we get further in the playoffs than half the teams, whatever seed it is, doesn't matter to me.
And last year they kind of caught a break with the run they had. You know, they caught Miami, who was a team they usually play well. You know, they caught Orlando, who had radically changed their roster, lost Hedo Turkoglu, and kind of changed the way that they had beaten the Celtics. And then, you know, just beat the Cavs with God knows what was going on with LeBron at that point. So they kind of did get a lucky path, and you wonder if, you know, I don't think this year is going to be as serendipitous for them.
I'll tell you what happened to the Magic. Vince Carter happened to the Magic.
Yep, that too.
And I mean, just because you sweep the Hawks in the second round doesn't mean anything. That's the problem I have with the Hawks. They always tank it in the playoffs, and they tank it at a historically bad rate. Mm-hmm. I mean, they get pushed and shoved around. They did make a trade. The late trade was that they traded Mike Bibby, Mo Evans, Jordan Crawford from Xavier, not Jamal Crawford, the sixth man of the year, and a first round draft pick for Kirk Heinrich and Hilton Armstrong. That's the deal.
Okay.
So Hilton Armstrong's still in the NBA?
I know. He played for us. He was so slow that his player intro music was Yabba Dabba Doo, probably because he about walked as fast as Fred Flintstone did. But he's a good defensive player. That's it. Kirk Heinrich is a nice player, and the Wizards really got him for nothing because the Bulls were giving away players to try to get into, you know, LeBronica.
Right.
But they didn't get it done, and they settled on Boozer. But Heinrich is a good player, and I think he's an upgrade over Bibby, but you did give up a first-round draft pick.
The big trade I've been hearing is who's going to be taking on Keith Van Horn's expiring contract.
That still exists.
Where is he? Is he in Milwaukee still?
I don't know, but it seemed like that contract was around forever.
That's kind of like Theo Ratliff.
Theo Ratliff. The best one was Peja Stojakovic. Before they bought him out, he was on his expiring year. The man was eating up $14 million to $12 million on the Hornets cap space.
Ugh.
Unbelievable.
It's just amazing when you think of these numbers. You know, it's like we talk about it like it's nothing, but, oh, yeah, we'll just cut that guy and pay him the $9 million. It's like we're just ridiculous to have some of these stiffs. And, you know, I'm never for contraction, but that may be the only thing that really helps solidify this league if some of these players do go to these big market teams and start to kind of build these super teams. Like, I mean, you know, people act like this is a new thing, but in the 80s, there were less teams, so a lot of teams were built like this. You look at those Lakers and Celtics and Rockets teams where they kind of were loaded in the Pistons and then even the Bulls where they had, you know, two major, you know, superstar players and then a couple of other stars.
And those were the glory days. Those were the days that people, you know, go back and go, oh, that's when basketball was great. Let me give you a great stat, and I want this backed up, but I'm almost sure this is right. When the Bulls went to the playoffs in 86 and Michael had that 63-point game and lost to the Celtics, the Bulls were 30-52 and made the playoffs.
I'm pretty sure, right? I'll check it out as we keep talking.
I mean, there were some really awful teams in the 80s, and you know, it just happens that way. You know, sometimes you just have four that are in the cellar. Someone's got to win all the games, and someone's got to lose all of them. There has never been parity in the NBA. That's what makes me laugh about all this, all of a sudden, you know, uproar about, oh my God, what's going on? They're taking all the stars away from these markets. Why are all the same teams so great? dude, go look at the NBA Finals since 1980. Seven mm-hmm. teams have won the NBA championship. Teams have gotten there. Teams have been on the cusp, but they've never won the NBA championship. There's only been seven different ones. And guess what seven are they? The same seven that are in the hunt right now for an NBA championship. It's not a coincidence. It's all about the market.
And as a diehard baseball fan, that's kind of what makes me laugh. When a lot of these people, you know, complain about the salary structure, which obviously is a disparity in baseball, but you look at the champions over the last decade, and there's as many in this decade as there are, you know, in 30 years for the NBA.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I find interesting now is that, and we've seen two different ways already occurring, is the small market teams and their urgency, whether if they have the urgency to push ahead and try to pull it off, you know, be the new guy, or do you say, I quit, fuck it, and give away my star because mm-hmm. I know I don't have a chance, just like Utah did. Because I think Utah realized that they were going to get screwed and be left standing at the door like Cleveland did and like Toronto did. And they said, you know what, we're not going to let this happen. We need to just get what we can right now. And if we have to do it a little earlier than we can and start the rebuilding maybe a year earlier than we wanted to, too bad, so sad. And then there are teams like New Orleans and teams like Oklahoma City who are all in, and they're going to, if that means that they have to go to the last contract year for their superstar to try to win an NBA championship, then so be it. I mean, it is impossible for you and I to hear this because I think it's not going to happen, but the New Orleans Hornets are trying to win an NBA championship right now
mm-hmm.
because if they don't, there's no way you can convince Chris Paul to stay.
Right.
It's just the truth.
And the thing with Utah, too, they're a team, while they haven't won a title, they've had a ridiculous amount of success. Scott and I, when we did a show, I think it was our first show, we talked about Jerry Sloan. And, yes. you know, we looked at the run that they had where they only had like 2 years under 500. And the rest, yeah. they were all in the thick of the playoffs. And a lot of times they were a team that was, you know, either in the Western Conference Finals, in the second round, in the finals. So if there is...
I remember 1 year they almost made the playoffs and their starting point guard was Carlos Arroyo.
Exactly. So, you know, it's like they're a team that if they do have to take a step back and have a rebuilding year, you know, that fan base, they really can't complain too much, I don't think, because they have had a lot of success.
And it depends.
Just to confirm, Andrew, you are, and again, this bails you out of you getting gurgling off the air. The Bulls in 1986 were indeed 30-52.
And they finished fourth.
How awful was that?
And they finished fourth.
Fourth in the division. The Bucks won 57 games. The Hawks won 50 games. Those were the Dominique years. Boy, do the Hawks miss him, huh? Joe Johnson, good player. He's no Dominique.
Okay.
The Pistons won 46 games. And then after that, the Bulls went 30-52. The Cavs were 29-53. And the Pacers were 26-56. That was in the Central.
I bet you anything when you look at the Central at the end of the year this year, it won't be that far.
Probably not.
It'll be very similar. It'll be strikingly so. It'll be different teams, but the Pistons are I can't. I mean, our friend Jordan is on the blog, and he's a huge Pistons fan. And I hate to do this to him, but man, that's a really crappy team. And
yeah.
I am almost convinced Tayshaun or Rip are going to be gone by Thursday. If they're not, I don't know why the hell they have those two and Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva just sitting there.
Well, it's kind of amazing too because they're a team. You know, Joe Dumars was praised greatly early in the decade when he kind of built those teams. But since then, he's
yes.
just kind of been, you know, driving the train off the cliff with the way he's been kind of running things. And I think it started with the drafting Darko Milicic.
It must be the way that general managers are with Detroit teams, because he's kind of in that Matt Millen mold there. And incidentally, this is an interesting fact I just realized. I'm looking at the roster of the 85-86 Bulls. You know who else was on that team? George Gervin.
Yes.
The Iceman?
Iceman.
Wow.
Yeah, that was right at the very end.
He played all 82 games and averaged 16 points a game.
The only two I remember on that team outside of Michael are Orlando Woolridge and Dave Corzine. That must have been a hot house party.
Yeah. Charles Oakley was a rookie on that team.
There you go.
Yeah.
John Paxson was young on that team. A lot of good guys. Sidney Green played 80 games.
And it's funny because you look back at those Bulls teams, and at the time I remember just despising them, but they were good for the league. And I think that's what maybe a lot of kids growing up now are looking at the Heat, that villain. And I think that's something the NBA hasn't had. They've had villains, but not for the right reasons. You know, they've had off-the-court villains.
It's just like pro wrestling.
Exactly.
For the best good guy, you need an even better bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, if you have face versus face, or I mean, sorry, I'm doing lingo. Like, no, I know ahead. The business.
I think that's most of our audience is good, in on it. So
good guy versus if you keep doing good guy versus good guy, you're just going to make your good guys consistently look bad. You know, watch TNA. But you got to have a great villain. You got to have somebody you have to hate. And I mean, it's pretty easy to hate LeBron, and LeBron, I don't think LeBron embraces it, but I don't think LeBron shies away from it.
Not at all.
I think TNA is run by the Detroit Pistons, actually. I think Joe Dumars books with Vince Russo.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
so, Scott, I actually wanted to, and I guess we should get Matt back involved here. I think he might be dozing off, but.
I'm here.
All right.
Okay. Scott, you put the Robitussin down.
Scott, I kind of want to call you out because on our board this afternoon, you said you hated the trade for Deron Williams for the Nets, and you said that they did it to just keep up with the Knicks. And I reposted. I don't know if you saw it yet, because it was recent. I did it within the last hour or so. I said that I think you're crazy, because I think Deron Williams is probably, you know, top 3 point guard in the league with Chris Paul and Derrick Rose, and probably top 2 true point guard. And I think you can argue that the Nets getting him can be better for their franchise than the Knicks getting Carmelo, only because it's harder to find a top-flight point guard like Deron Williams provides you, as opposed to like a wing scorer like Carmelo. And this is coming from I'm a big Carmelo fan. I'm a big Carmelo believer. But I just think that I don't think that was a desperation trade by the Nets. I think it was something that maybe is that piece that says, look, we got this guy, you know, come here now, and maybe Dwight Howard or whoever does end up there.
I will agree with you that Deron Williams is definitely a top 3 player, but I still think that number one, I think he really hurt himself with this whole Jerry Sloan situation. And if he's not going to get along with Jerry, if he's getting along with Jerry Sloan as a Hall of Fame coach, I can't imagine him getting along with Avery Johnson, particularly if the Nets just keep losing.
He's quickly getting a reputation as a locker room cancer.
Number two, I'll agree with you about Devin Harris. Devin Harris is fine. I think the whole thing that pisses me off about the trade is why trade Derek Favors. I mean, the guy is a young stud. He's going to be a great forward. He just needed some time. And now, other than Brook Lopez, they really kind of hurt their front court. And I think the Nets, I think the whole going to Brooklyn thing is great. But I don't know if they're – I mean, in 2 years, the Knicks could conceivably be a powerhouse.
Especially if they get Chris Paul, too.
If they keep working. Exactly. That, and then in 2 years, if they – Exactly. And the Nets, I think, just have a little bit more work to do. And I think the Derek Favors part of it pisses me off more than anything else. I don't mind. You know what? I have nothing against Devin Harris. And you're right. Deron Williams is an upgrade. But trading Derek Favors, I thought, was stupid. They didn't have to. This was the kind of trade where I don't think they needed to trade Derek Favors. They probably could have done something else.
I really
like the kid. I watched him in high school. I watched him the 1 year at Georgia Tech. And I've watched a few Nets games with him. The kid's going to be a great power forward.
He's
or center,
enormous.
Depending what team. He's huge. And yeah. I think trading him was unnecessary. I think they could have worked something else out where they could have kept him.
I don't know.
That's my opinion.
Go ahead, Matt.
I think that they needed to add him. I'll be honest with you. I mean, who else are they going to give? Devin Harris is a good point guard, but he's not great.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just put him one-for-one player. They don't compare.
Right.
They needed to add in the draft picks and add in they wanted to add in the 4 for that they did for Carmelo. They weren't going to do that for Deron. They're not Carmelo and Deron or Deron, however the heck you say his name, it would be ridiculous.
The problem I have with it for Utah's sake is that, you know, they say, well, you have a great front court now with Paul Millsap, who's a really, really nice underrated player. Al Jefferson and now you have Favors. Here's my issue with it. Once Favors really blossoms, it's probably likely that one of those two players that I already mentioned are probably going to be gone and out of their way. And you're not really going to be able to get a three. You can't play a 3-man front court in the NBA. You need guards. It's a guard heavy league. That's why I didn't like the trade for Utah. If you could have found a way to keep Deron, try, but if they got a feeler that he wasn't going to stay, then I don't think they had the choice. I'll tell you, they're saying, who's the big winner of Carmelo's trade? Who's the big winner of Deron Williams? I'll tell you, the big winner is of both trades, the Thunder and the Blazers, because now they own that division.
Yep. And I think another big winner is Memphis, because they are a half game behind Utah right now. And they're only half game out. So, I mean, Utah is going to take that hit. You know, I think they'll still be solid, but they're definitely going to take that hit. And now you look at Memphis to maybe sneak in that last spot.
They did. They did suffer a setback. Rudy Gay's out for a month with a shoulder injury.
Okay, that'll hurt.
Yeah, he's like a poor man's LeBron James, basically.
Or even you look at Phoenix. I mean, they're only, you know, two games out.
Yeah, Phoenix is going to try. I don't like that Phoenix team at all.
No, they're a mess.
No, I said earlier on when you guys were trying to rehook that I thought they were the Western Conference's biggest disappointment. I thought there was a lot more talent on that team than we thought, and they've really kind of flatlined. And I was never a big Alvin Gentry fan. I thought he kind of coached over his head and almost knocked the Lakers off in the conference finals last year. But you can clearly see that without some kind of talent, he's not the greatest coach on the planet, and clearly
I'll always respect Alvin Gentry because he was the head coach of the funniest team in NBA history, the 2001 Clippers. They had Darius Miles, Quentin Richardson. They just had Lamar Odom. I mean, they probably smoke more weed than somebody smokes a lot of weed. I mean, that must have been just a hoot and a holler. So Gentry's seen his characters. He's trying his best, but you know, they're basically copycatting what Mike D'Antoni did. Mm-hmm. But Mike D'Antoni does it better. The problem is, does what Mike D'Antoni institute get you to the NBA championship? The Knicks, you know, there's this assumption the Knicks just want a taste. They just want a lick of the pie. Mm-hmm. No, they want to win the whole thing. They want the NBA championship. Once you give them a little taste of success, they want to dive right in. If Mike D'Antoni can't get them past the second round in the near future, you know, that's going to be an issue. The problem is there going to be a near future in the NBA?
That's another issue. I think that might be a whole other episode after the season. We're going to have to do a whole collective bargaining and lockout.
It's gonna
episode for sure.
Interesting. It's gonna be. Let me just put it this way: we're gonna have a lot of podcasts about the NBA with nothing, no NBA. I'll put it this way: by December 31st of 2011, there will not be a single NBA game played. I guarantee it.
Yeah, there might be a good chance there might not be an NFL game played either. Could you imagine a fall with no NFL and no NBA?
If the NFL continues their lockout through the entire 2011 season, they are mentally retarded.
Yeah, killing off a. You know, in baseball, probably stands to profit the most from all this, but, you know, football, yeah, NFL, and that's another one for another day. But if the NFL, yeah, if they ever went through with this lockout, it's just completely retarded. I don't think they're going to do it. I think they have to realize how much money's at stake. And a lot of these players, like Scott and I actually talk about this in our other podcast, a lot of these players do live check to check. And I think once they start realizing those checks aren't coming is when they're going to cave.
The thing is, the NBA players have guaranteed money.
Right. Yeah. And that's a whole different story.
Exactly. But, I mean, Antoine Walker put himself broke after he was making $11 million a year as early as, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, NBA players are pretty spendthrift. I'm not sure about NFL players. I don't know how the cultures clash. But the one thing I disagree about with the chaos theories you're hearing about, the lockouts are going to kill the ratings in the NFL. I'm sorry, in the NBA. I don't agree with that because the NFL is going to rope in the viewers despite whatever length of absence they do. Even if the NBA loses an entire season, I think that they'll be able to bring the viewers back. They might even be able to reinstitute even more viewership because of the fact that they have so many big-time clubs in already set in the league. What happened in 98 is that it was the perfect storm of shit mm-hmm. for the NBA. Michael Jordan retired. There was not, if anybody really wants to, you know, think about it, they might be able to disagree. I thought in the late 90s, basketball went absolutely into the shitter. I thought NBA basketball was worse than it's ever been in the late 90s.
Yeah, I think 99 is definitely the peak of that. 99, 2000. In that run, I still think 96, 97, 98 were solid years, but it was definitely heading down the hill.
Yeah, the scoring average was so poor, mm-hmm. and 2004 was about the lowest. I think it went down to something to the 94s for the seasonal average. It's risen every year since then until I think this year, but it's only been a slight dip. But you know, it was just a really poor, it was just bad timing. When the Bulls broke up, there really wasn't a team there until the Lakers got Phil Jackson. And there was just, the interest in the league was just based off of, you know, well, Latrell Sprewell choked up coach. He's a mm-hmm. me first player. Allen Iverson looks like a thug, and they don't play exciting basketball, which they did. And most of the teams that you saw in the NBA Finals or in the Eastern or Western Conference Finals were just, they were just really tough to watch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the funny thing about the San Antonio Spurs, like Matt was talking about, you always get this assumption that the San Antonio Spurs are so boring to watch. And I've been a victim of this. I've always said, oh, I hate the Spurs. They're so fucking boring. They walk it up. They just play defense and try to physical you out of the game. I've been watching the Spurs for the last 2 years. They've pretty much changed their style of play almost completely.
Yes.
I think they're a very up-tempo team. They use Parker and Ginobili more now, more like a Euro offense where they just swing everything around and they put in DeJuan Blair and Matt Bonner and they chuck up threes. I think they play a very exciting, fun brand of basketball, but because they're the Spurs and they've had this kind of like brand of rough and tough play that they kind of get, they always get this like idea of, oh my God, we don't want to see the Spurs. They don't want to see the Spurs in the finals because when they're in the finals, the ratings are terrible.
Right, and I think...
Well, And the other thing, sorry, Justin, I just want to say, the other thing is, and maybe it's just my fact that I pay attention more to the East Western Conference being a Laker fan, but I have always considered, and this is not a knock on Greg Popovich, who's a very good coach. I think it's just the roster. I've always considered the Spurs one of the softer teams in the NBA. If you look at their four NBA titles, 99, they got the eighth seeded Knicks, who were on a wing and a prayer.
Plus in the short season as well.
I do not count the lockout shortened season.
Yeah, 2003.
I just don't.
2003, they beat a okay but not great Nets team. I mean, the Lakers pretty much exposed them the year before.
Byron Scott was the head coach of that team. Byron Scott.
2005, I'll give them props for that one because they beat a really good Pistons team and beat them in seven games. In 2007, they beat LeBron and four bums mm-hmm. in the finals.
And the league royally screwed the Phoenix Suns in the second round.
Yes, that was sick.
Just beyond awful. I couldn't even believe it. I was rooting for the Suns.
In all the other years in the 2000s, they either played a better Laker team, or they just played a team that was just overall tougher, and they couldn't do it. And I've never disliked a player, and it's not his talent, but I've never disliked it because I've watched him enough times in college too. And maybe this is the product of playing, and I don't want to go into a college debate, and I know Matt and I will kick into this on another podcast, but maybe it's just the way the ACC has always played. But I cannot stand watching Tim Duncan play basketball. I have never seen a guy bitch and moan more in my life than watching Tim Duncan play basketball. Why? Because he played in the shoot, don't touch me ACC, where nobody touches anybody. But ever since he was a rookie, he gets that Michael Jordan look after a foul. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean? And, you know, Michael Jordan, as much as he probably got away with more travels than anybody, he earned the reputation for being able to take a third step and being able to kind of bump into guys. I mean, come on, he pushed Brian Russell on that jumper against the Jazz in 98.
Tim Duncan is a big time whiner. I'll tell you who number two is. It's Paul Pierce.
Hey,
I can't say. I'll go on my Celtics rant. You need swagger in the NBA. In the 90s, everybody had swagger because you needed to show how tough and how rough you were, because that was the only way you were going to get by in the NBA. The Miami Heat did that with Alonzo Mourning, and the Pat Riley did that with the New York Knicks. And I understand that with the Celtics. If you want to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk, and they do so and they win. I just can't stand how obnoxious they are. They really just – I just can't stand it.
Look at Kobe Bryant, like we did in the All-Star game.
Oh, yeah.
he had to like a little baby. Only he was out there was for himself like he normally is.
Who, Kobe?
Yes. Yeah,
Kobe hogged it because he was at home and he wanted the MVP and he did it.
They do that every home game All-Star game.
Exactly. I remember when they were in Phoenix and Shaq and Kobe, they shared it because sharing is caring. And I remember when Shaq won it when they were back in L.A. and – yeah, they always – the funniest one was when Kobe won the All-Star Game MVP in Philadelphia, which was his old hometown, and they booed the crap out of him.
Oh, yeah, because he hates it there. Yeah, I remember that too. Yeah.
And he still hates it to this day. He'll go to Philadelphia, and he'll just stick it to him just because he hates the fact that they booed him. I mean, Kobe is a really vindictive guy. you know, a lot of people hate him. You know, it might even still reverberate from the rape accusation and the fact that he sabotaged the 2004 team, the Laker team. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's the second greatest shooting guard that's ever played in NBA basketball.
Actually, before you go any further, I gotta talk about that 2004 Laker team for a minute. As much as Kobe was a pain in the ass, and him and Shaq didn't get along, I absolutely wanted to punch Gary Payton in the face. I've never seen a lazier guy in my entire life in those last two rounds of the playoffs that year than Gary Payton.
And I was glad him and Malone didn't get those rings. I mean, I understand why they went there, but just going there in that last year, and Malone, you know, I felt bad those two Jazz teams that got hosed. They were so, you know, as good as they were. But I was pretty happy to see the Lakers lose.
That was the only time I couldn't cheer for a Laker team. They were so hard to watch, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the interesting thing. We were talking about Joe Dumars assembling that team in 04 and the team in L.A. And it's interesting because in 2003, a lot of teams loaded up big time at that time for what was considered star players to try to make a ring quest. I call it a ring quest. You know, the Lakers did it with Gary Payton and Karl Malone. The Minnesota Timberwolves got Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell. The Dallas Mavericks did some of the dumbest trades I've ever seen. I think they got Antoine Walker and Anton Jameson.
Yep.
And they floundered in the first round. The Kings signed Brad Miller, and they tried to make their run. What I'm saying is that people have tried to assemble super teams of what would be considered in the league at that very moment, a super team, to try to make a run at the title. The difference between the 2004 Lakers and the 2008 Celtics is that the 2008 Celtics did it, and they did it convincingly. And it's a copycat league. If the Lakers had won that NBA championship in 04, every general manager in the NBA would have been trying to assemble all-stars to their team because the Lakers did it, and that's the way they won. When the Pistons basically beat them with their dick, They just decided, okay, we got to have hardworking teams like the Spurs, and they tried to copycat their way into a championship in that fashion for at least a few years. Once the Celtics made that move and they won an NBA championship, and then when Pau Gasol went to LA and then they won back to back, that's when, you know, and as this is a term in the Blog of Doom, that's when shit got real, you know.
And I think, I think the Celtics being the blueprint is kind of why I don't think the Knicks fans, I couldn't believe some of the reactions to them about how much they gave up to get Carmelo.
And
exactly. And the same thing with Scott's kind of talking about giving up favors. You know, look at the Celtics. They were ripped pretty good when they traded Al Jefferson, you know, getting a guy in Garnett who a lot of people were wondering, can he do it in the big market? Is he on the downside of his career? You do it, you win the title, and they reinvigorated their whole franchise, and they gave up what many people thought was a franchise player in Al Jefferson. Now, this could be the same thing the Nets are doing with Derek Favors. Is it worth it? We'll see, but you need to rebrand your franchise sometimes and just turn things around. And, you know, as much as I hate the team, it's kind of like what the Red Sox did early in the decade as well, to get a little bit of that swagger, to bring in some players that set the tone to kind of rebuild your franchise.
And what was the question we were constantly hearing in Boston? Oh, man, can they win the NBA title with Rajon Rondo? Well, yeah.
Go ahead, Matt.
I'm sorry. The main thing about the Knicks trade were the fans hating how much they gave up. I mean, I can see their point in effect, but, like, I agree that getting a superstar, it doesn't matter who you give up. It just sucks that it's in the middle of a season. Like when the Celtics picked up Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, it was in the offseason. They had enough time to scour the free agent market guys like James Posey, Eddie House.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the middle of a season. You're not going to get the cream out of the crowd of the free agent list.
Yeah, but this was a special, I don't say special occasion, but it was kind of an outlier, whereas Carmelo kind of needed for his own good to be traded within the season so he can possibly sign that max extension that may have been prevented by the new CBA.
It was financially motivated.
Yeah. And now because they have no more picks until at least probably 2015, at least in the first round, they have to pretty much pick up everyone off the free agent list.
Yeah, well, neither do the Miami Heat. Exactly.
The Miami Heat gave away all their draft picks to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They didn't even have to give them sign-and-trades. People forget, they gave sign-and-trades to the LeBron. When LeBron James and Chris Bosh signed their contract, they signed them to the Toronto Raptors and Cleveland Cavaliers. They traded them back to the teams that they wanted to go to, and those teams got draft picks. The problem for those teams is they got a bunch of draft picks that are probably going to be down in the 30s.
Right.
because they'll I don't see any way that even with the worst supporting cast ever, and they really tried hard to make it happen this year, the Miami Heat will never be worse than the third best team in the NBA.
Especially when they get Marshawn Brooks next year.
Does he get mad? 52 points. 52.
Will he be starting at the two? That'd be amazing.
He may be.
Does he get mad? The Raptors traded their pick anyway.
He's like Jimmer Fredette, only blacker.
and better. Well, see, this is actually my theory. Jimmer Fredette, to me, is basically like quadruple A at this point. He's just like above everyone in college basketball. That's how ridiculous he is. So, to me, Brooks is basically leading, you know, the regular players in the NCAA.
I like Fredette. If someone picked him in the lottery, you know, even J.J. Redick found his way around. And I think that if you look at him as a player who could go into the pros, I think Fredette is actually more prepared than or more pro ready than even Redick is. And Redick is a nice player. Mm-hmm. You don't want to. I know what they're fearful of. They're fearful of another Adam Morrison.
Right.
And I'm telling you, he's not another. Oh, you want to talk about how great Michael Jordan is as an exec.
I don't think anyone does.
He picked Adam Morrison third, and I think LaMarcus Aldridge went fourth, maybe he went second, but Brandon Roy went sixth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wow.
Oh, I can't believe, you know, the one, and let me tell you something, I was on cloud nine winning that game seven last year against the Celtics, but I thought to myself, Jesus Christ, Adam Morrison has an NBA ring, and I did more in those finals than he did. I mean, for God's sake.
You saw the skit with Jimmy Kimmel where they just had all the Adam Morrison high fives.
I feel so bad for Adam Morrison, though. The guy coming out of Gonzaga, he was just a monster that year.
The problem with him is that he was flat-footed. I mean, he did have a phenomenal mustache. I mean, a phenomenal mustache.
Now,
I am jealous of that mustache.
Speaking of great young players, and we were talking a minute ago about what's going to happen with the CBA, but let's shoot ahead 3 years because we're talking about all these moves and everything. Watching your team here, Andrew, who are winning at the moment while we're talking. The guy on the screen right now, number 32 for the Clippers, who has just totally set the – I think he's gotten more press this year, and he's earned it than the guys on the Heat. And, of course, I'm talking about Blake Griffin. You know, I don't know what the rookie contract is, but you tell me in 5 years or 6 years this guy's still going to be playing for the Clippers.
I think so.
He might. I mean, here's the thing. You don't know the motivation of some of the superstars. Some of them really do want to stay. They really do appreciate the loyalty that they get. But it's really, really, really hard to believe that when you watch a guy who came from Akron, and I want to hear, well, Akron's home, Cleveland's not. Fuck all that shit. It's the same goddamn city.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's the same area. And he, you know, for a guy who's a local product from Cleveland or the Cleveland area, goes to the team, tries to make it a champion, gets almost there, and then he leaves it behind. And I know what people are thinking. It's like Hogan. It's like Hogan in 96. It's like, oh, my God, if the greatest good guy ever is a dickhead, everybody's a dickhead.
Yep.
You know, and that's kind of the theory that everybody's starting to get. Who can you trust? And these people in Utah and these people in Denver are kind of looking around their shoulders and going, I can't trust anybody. And so I need to just, you know, I need to go get out of this bed where I might be sleeping with the enemy.
And I think Blake stays there. I think this is their chance to finally maybe grab a little bit of a foothold in that city. And, you know, just reading some reports, and I think mainly Bill Simmons is the biggest drum banger on this one, about how Clippers games are becoming must-see now, and more celebrities are going to these games, and they're becoming, you know, they're being televised more. And apparently David Stern is a huge Blake Griffin fan. And I think if the Clippers can finally get their shit together, they have a nice young team. They got Eric Gordon there. And, you know, Blake Griffin continues to develop. And even they got a lot of good role players. I'm going to name drop my Providence boy. Ryan Gomes is having a good year for them. And they have a likable team. And they play in a major market. I don't see why they can't maybe be a landing spot for a free agent or two. And maybe as Kobe starts to ride off into the sunset a little bit, and if the Lakers start to fade, I can see them maybe taking that town over a little bit if things go right. Things have to fall right.
And the day that happens,
the only problem there is, I just got to say this quick, the only problem is Donald Sterling.
Yes,
exactly.
Is probably the biggest buffoon in the entire NBA. The guy is a moron.
They have to pour a 40. I said, I will. That day will happen when I go to LA and I pour a 40 on Donald Sterling's grave and sing. It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
They that's pretty much me the only way. But like I said, things have to fall right, and part of that was that maybe he'll either give the team up or, you know, be forced to when he passes away. So,
but like, But like Scott was talking about the Hornets did make a deal. They got Carl Landry from the Sacramento Kings, the Sacraheim Kings, I call them now. And they got Carl Landry in exchange for Marcus Thornton, who was an LSU product from the second round, second-year player, plays very well. He comes off of the bench for the Hornets and just instant offense. And they traded him for Landry because they needed front court depth. When Emeka Okafor got hurt, they were down to having to play DJ Benga and Jason Smith. So, yeah, they needed a big guy. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much better that makes the Hornets. It's, I don't want to call it a secondary trade, but it's a smaller trade compared to the ones that we've seen over the last 3 days.
And the bigger falloff in that trade is apparently Mark Cuban's pretty pissed off because the Hornets had to absorb debt in that trade. And he's pissed because, as you know, the league took over the Hornets.
I guess the league pays the debt, yeah.
Well, it's actually all the other 29 teams basically own.
Okay, yeah, they spread it around.
Yeah, so he's basically paying for that trade. And this was a problem with baseball as well. When it wasn't the Nationals, who else did, was it baseball? There was another team recently that illegal.
They owned the Rangers. They temporarily
owned.
That's
who it was. Yes, the Rangers. Yep. And taking,
went to the World Series.
Yep. And I know a lot of teams were upset that they were able to make the, you know, Cliff Lee trade and, take on, additional salary when all the other teams were pretty much subsidizing them.
Yeah. But
as of right now, just a quick update, as we were talking about the standings a minute ago, Memphis is right now the 8th team in the West right now.
So Utah lost.
Yeah, they're a half game ahead of Utah. And right now the Lakers are trailing Portland at the half. They're down by
Yeah, that's the other question. What happens to Denver and Utah? And I've had disagreements with a couple people about it. I think Denver will be okay. I just don't see any hope for Utah. I think Utah is in a lot of trouble.
For a couple of years. I think they'll be able to turn it around. But yeah, this year, if you're looking at it, I definitely think they're in trouble. And Denver, well, I think they're in better shape. You know, Phoenix can get their shit together. I think both Memphis and Phoenix can maybe squeak into those last two spots.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you were talking about the contraction issue, and you know, it's an embattling thing locally down here. I mean, as much as people like to call in and claim, oh God, we're all Hornets fans. I cheer them. I go to every game. They don't. Mm-hmm. You know, we barely made the incentive on the attendance regularly to even keep the team from being able to get out of their lease. It's basically a New Orleans Saints town. It's always been who dat, and it's always been LSU. So there's a lot of talk right now with the contraction issue because it was brought up in the All-Star weekend. David Stern didn't shy away from it, and Billy Hunter basically said, you know, hey, shit happens, bro. Mm-hmm. And there is a chance. You know, I do think because of the outstanding exception of the fact that the Hornets are owned by the league, I do think that contraction is possible for that team. I'd prefer relocation. You think contraction is better off in the league?
I'm gonna say it's only better because I think it'll help with the some of the depth issues and maybe solidify the talent base where you will have teams that maybe less teams that are better.
It stops the watering down.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. So I personally would rather see them relocate as well. You know, there are a bunch of cities, and actually David Stern mentioned this on the latest BS report where he was asked, and he said that there are cities on their radar. St. Louis, he said, Kansas City, both have arenas that could support a team. Also, Las Vegas, I guess he mentioned, and Vancouver, I guess, is trying to get back in the game as well. And he also mentioned Seattle if they ever get their new arena.
You know, I honestly think you will never. I was just gonna say I don't think you will ever see a major sports team in the city of Las Vegas. I just don't think any league wants to touch that city with a 10-foot pole.
The point shaving is too sexy.
Yeah, there's just too much.
You know, he had. I can't remember the exact reasoning he had, but Stern actually gave because Bill Simmons brought that up, and Stern actually had a pretty good answer as to why that's not as much of a concern as people make it out to be. I really can't remember what it is right now. But I do suggest maybe if you get a chance, that was actually a really good podcast. Stern was very, very open about multiple things. So that was a pretty good listen. And he does get into that.
You two are Scott and Justin. I got to say your reviews are fantastic. I love them. I've read them for years and years and years. And if anybody is listening to this, please, please, if you know anything about pro wrestling, go read their reviews. They're fantastic. So just to steal from your gimmick, I'll give you a fun fact. It's funny how we're talking about the relocation and how the franchises move and what owner makes what decisions, how one decision, one measly decision, or one one pinball or one coin flip made a change back to about 30 or 40 years ago that really could have reverberated into something even much, much bigger, you know, today. When Kentucky is one of the cities I thought of when I was thinking about relocation, and I think they have a brand new arena in Louisville called the Yum Center.
Yep.
Kentucky had a great ABA team called the Colonels.
Yes.
And they, if you've ever been to Rupp Arena, that city loves them some basketball. They eat, breathe, sleep, drink, breathe basketball. And John Y. Brown was the owner of the Kentucky Colonels in the ABA. When the merger happened, pretty much the stables in the ABA were the Pacers, the Colonels, the San Antonio Spurs, the New York Nets, and I know I'm forgetting a team. I think the Denver Nuggets. And
the Flint Tropics.
Yeah, the Flint Tropics. And the Spirits of St. Louis, who actually did exist, for those who actually want to know.
As a side note, Andrew, talking about the Spirit of St. Louis, do we all remember what jersey John Cena wore when he was first drafted to Raw in 2005?
Was it 54?
No, it was a Spirit of St. Louis jersey.
Oh, wow. Marvin Bad News Barnes, probably.
He actually was just Barnes was just mentioned tonight because Brooks tied his Providence record.
Yeah, that was back in the Ernie Di Gregorio days. I mean, Jesus.
The 73 Final Four. Incidentally, Andrew, I have a question. Are you actually watching the Hornets-Clippers game right now, or do you have it on?
Unfortunately, no,
ESPN, who usually is pretty solid from a production viewpoint, is taking some serious analog hits. I mean, the picture's bouncing all over the place, and I don't know what's going on down there.
I think Jeremy Shockey is so depressed that he destroyed the camera truck. In a truck page. But no, what I was trying to say about Kentucky is that when they made the merger, the owner of the Colonels basically said, "Screw this, I don't want to be in Kentucky, I'm backing out." And he took the buyout when they did the merger instead of trying to continue with the franchise. So they collapsed the franchise with the other 25 other ABA franchises that failed. And those other teams that I mentioned survived. And then John Brown turned around and used that money to purchased the Boston Celtics.
Mm-hmm. And then he switched with Buffalo, right? Or something like that?
Yeah, the Buffalo Braves, who later, I believe, became the San Diego Clippers.
Yes, I believe so.
That is true, yes.
All right, so let's, I think we should maybe, before we start wrapping up, turn to the second half. And there's two things I want to just get to. One, I meant a point I wanted to make a while ago about the Nets. Maybe not being as far off. I know Sky mentioned a couple years away and Darren Williams and when they get to Brooklyn. But right now, they are 9 games out of a playoff spot. Too big to come back this year. But does Darren Williams at least make them, you know, half as much better? And can they catch, you know, the teams ahead of them are Detroit, Milwaukee, Charlotte, Indiana. You know, those are teams they can easily pass, I think, if they can get a couple more pieces in the offseason and maybe eventually land a Dwight Howard. So that's just something I wanted to get in before we moved on. But I also wanted to give Matt, who I kind of feel bad we've left behind in our dust here, a chance to see if there's anything, you know, that we've talked about that he has a quick opinion on before we get to our predictions.
The one thing I wanted to say, was about the New Orleans Hornets and how they're being owned by the NBA. I'm actually happier they're owned by the NBA. I hated George Shinn, I think was his name.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was a complete asshole.
Yes,
mainly for the fact that right after Hurricane Katrina, he was complaining to the city that he wanted a practice facility and how they promised him a practice facility. They had more problems to be worrying about than building a freaking practice facility for the freaking Hornets.
George Shinn is one of the only professional sports owners who has ever royally fucked two different cities.
Yes. And I grew up in Rhode Island, but I was actually a pretty big Charlotte Hornets fan growing up. I think it's because they were the hot team in the early 90s. You know, the colors were in. And, when they drafted Larry
Grandmama,
Johnson.
Everyone loved Grandmama.
Oh, yeah. I was on board big time. I loved him. I used to argue with everyone that I thought Alonzo Mourning was better than Shaq when they came in. I was a huge diehard Hornets fan. I loved when they beat the Celtics in 93. I hated how they always lost to the frickin' Knicks. And then I was so pissed off in 95. It looked like it was going to be their year. And then they catch the Bulls in the second round, or maybe it was even the first round, and Jordan had just come back and they got fucked there. And so to watch what happened is kind of what turned me off when they moved to New Orleans, what George Shinn did to that franchise constantly, all the stars they had, you know, and every time they started to get big, he would trade them off because he didn't want to pay them. You know, Larry Johnson, Alonzo eventually, Glenn Rice. You know, every time he'd make a trade, he'd bring someone else in and then force them out as well. So eventually, yeah. I just gave up on the franchise. I'm like, this team's never going anywhere.
And that's why I'm not terribly upset with the Hornets probably relocating or on the cusp of a possible relocation, mm-hmm. because we stole the Hornets from Charlotte, who loved that team. They didn't leave that team because they hated the Hornets or they hated that team. They hated George Shinn.
Exactly.
They didn't want to give George Shinn an arena. He had, I believe, a sexual harassment trial in the city of Charlotte that was very controversial, and they voted not to have a new arena, basically as a big screw you to George Shinn. George said, well, okay, you're daring me to leave, well, I'll leave. And David Stern has shown through the Seattle situation, through right now the Sacramento situation, he's not afraid to back the owner if the city is not willing to pony up the money. He mm-hmm. will go with the owner and do whatever he wants. And, you know, we went to New Orleans and we basically did the sports business equivalent of cramming for your final exam. We made every incentive for a 4-month stretch for David Stern to want the Hornets, to get the Hornets, to bring the Hornets to the new arena. And we got it. The moment we got it, we didn't give a shit.
Right.
And it's just the truth.
And I think those Hornets fans were also disenfranchised just by, like I said, the way he constantly traded away all their stars. And it's funny to remember that they actually drafted Kobe Bryant as well. And I know the deal was to trade him to
the
Lakers.
And they traded him for Vlade Divac.
Exactly. Yes. And I think
outstanding. Yes. Loved it.
And I mean, I was like just a huge Glenn Rice fan. I mean, when they traded him, that was pretty much the final straw for me.
Yeah,
as a Hornets fan. And I was just like, you know what? This team's never going to get it. And and they still haven't, so it sucks.
It's ironic, too, because the head coach of the Charlotte Bobcats, who are trying for a last spot, is the old coach of the Charlotte Hornets, Paul Silas. And they're actually playing much, much better.
Yeah, he's a good coach. I always liked him in Charlotte. I liked Alan Bristow. I always thought they had, you know, good teams, and it's like they just needed that final piece. And
they always had great role players like David Wesley and Bobby Phils, God rest his soul. And,
he was great.
Muggsy Bogues. They always had really good role players. It was like the Oddities. It was like guys that are good at I don't know if they were good at anything. That's a terrible example. Man, yeah,
I think Golga would have been a hell of a point guard, let me tell you.
The Giant Silva was an amazing talent. Simply amazing, the athletic ability that guy had.
Now, John Tenta was an amateur wrestler at Louisiana State. I mean, was an amateur wrestler. I'm almost sure.
I think you're right. And then he went into sumo and then wrestling.
Yeah, John Tenta. Cartman. Big Cartman. But no.
You want to talk about talent, though, quickly, before let me get out of my head. I was checking on the ticker. Tonight, Kevin Love had his 44th straight double-double.
Wow. Yeah.
Talk about a guy wasting away in a shitty franchise.
You want to talk about rebounding machine? I think Joakim Noah at halftime had 11 rebounds.
Yeah, he finished with 16. Back.
3 months, yeah. I mean, I like the Bulls. You know, that's a good segue. I really like Chicago. I think Chicago could actually get to the NBA Finals.
I agree.
I think Derrick Rose is the MVP. I really do.
All right, and that is a good segue to let's hit up some quick predictions before we wrap up. But I do want to let you know, Andrew, you were right. Tenta went to LSU where he did compete in collegiate wrestling. So,
wow.
And he did letter as well.
He better.
And he played rugby.
And
you're serious.
Well, he played football.
Wow. Oh, well, that wouldn't stun me. That wouldn't stun me.
Yeah, it says right here he was known as a giant. Quiet.
Oh, yeah.
He was also
right.
A bouncer, and then he played rugby for the rugby club. A great picture of him here without his mustache and beard. Pretty funny.
You got to be pretty swole to be a bouncer in Louisiana, I got to say. Hmm. Ask our friend Clay.
All right, so let's do this. Let's go ahead and we'll kind of go round table quick. I'll kind of maybe say a category. And each of you guys may just give a quick, 15-second answer to each of these. So who gets the eighth? Let's say who gets a 7-8 spot in each conference? Start with the East. Go ahead, Scott. Why don't you start?
I think in the East, I just lost. I just want to have the team in front of me. Hold on. I had changed my page. I think 7-8 in the East. I think the Sixers will hold on to the 7. I actually think where it is right now in the East is going to stay.
Okay.
I think the Sixers will keep the 7 and the Pacers are going to keep the 8.
All right. How about you, Matt?
I'm also trying to get back to the standings. I'm going off of it. Andrew, you going for, before, man. I'm waiting to get there.
Okay. The seven in the East, I'd say Philadelphia. I think they're gonna stay the course. The eighth spot, I'll say Charlotte. Man, if the Nets hadn't tanked so badly, mm-hmm. I would have said New Jersey, but New Jersey is 9 games out of the last spot. That's how bad they were.
Yeah,
so
that's
even
a lot
as
to come
good
back
as D Will is, and just to answer an earlier question, Darren Williams makes the Nets twice as good as they were.
Yes.
That's how I feel. But I don't think they can cover that much ground in that much time. And I don't know if Avery Johnson is the right fit for Darren Williams. I think that's oil and water. And then in the seventh spot in that one's tough in the West because it's very muddled in the bottom. But in the seventh spot, I'll say New Orleans. And in the eighth spot, I'll say I'll probably say Denver.
So who do you like to go to six then?
Six, probably Memphis. I think Memphis can climb up.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what, in the 6, 7, 8, whoever's in the top 3 seeds in the West, they're gonna anally rape them.
Yeah, it's not gonna be long. Yeah.
Now 4, 5, if that winds up being Thunder Blazers, that's a hell of a series.
Yes, it is. That's going 7, I think.
Yeah.
Matt, who do you like in the East West 7, 8?
As for 7, 8 in the Eastern, I like Philadelphia as well. I think they'll definitely be number 7. But 8, I'm going to go with Milwaukee. For the mere fact, I think Brendan Jennings is a great point guard. And we'll have Michael Redd come back. If he can do what he was doing a few years ago.
You're a bastard. You are a bastard. You stole my surprise pick. I hate you.
That's what I'm here for.
And that was the exact reason I was going to give, was that Michael Redd was coming back. And if he was in any kind of shape, I think they can definitely, you know, they're only 4 out. And I think, you know, they're in the same division with Indiana, so I'm sure they're going to play them, you know, at least once or twice more.
You asked about disappointments. That's my biggest disappointment of the year in Milwaukee.
They are disappointed.
It could have been a lot better. Scott Skiles fails at life.
He's definitely one of those guys that seems to wear out his welcome pretty easily.
Does.
So
he's a grinder.
And Matt, who do you like in the West, 7 and 8?
I like actually Memphis in the 7 position.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 8th, I actually think Utah will actually make a step up and go into the playoffs still.
So you think we're going to stay there? So you think Denver drops out?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with, I agree with you. I think Memphis goes up to 7, and I think 8 will be Denver, or I think maybe Phoenix. You just never want to count out Steve Nash. He's just that good. I think maybe he can get them, you know, those 2 games, close them in, and maybe knock Denver out, you know, maybe in that last couple weeks. So with that said, we pretty much, you know our playoff matchups. Who do we think is going to advance to the second round?
Actually, I didn't make my 7-8.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. Good.
You actually took my thunder because I think Memphis is gonna. You know what I think? I think Denver's gonna stay at 7, and I think Phoenix is gonna move up in 8. I think Memphis is gonna drop out.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think not having Rudy Gay for a while is gonna hurt them. I think Phoenix, as much as they disappointed me, I have a feeling that they're going to – I agree with you. Steve Nash is a guy that can make anybody good, and I think they're going to go on a late run and take the 8th spot, and I think Memphis is going to drop.
Okay, and then who do you like in the second round in the East playoffs?
The Eastern Conference semifinals will be – I think they're going to be the top 4.
Okay.
Well, you know what? No, I don't. I think it's going to be Celtics, Miami, Orlando, and the Knicks.
So you think Chicago is going down first round?
I think the Knicks are going to take the Bulls out in 7.
Okay, that's interesting. Matt, who do you like in the second round?
I'm in the Eastern. I'm actually going to go with Boston, Miami, Chicago, and Atlanta.
So you think Atlanta knocks off Orlando?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Orlando is very weak right now.
How about you, Andrew?
I think I'll take the – I'll go with the predictable. I'll go with Boston and Orlando, and then I'll go with the Heat and the Bulls, and that'll be a very, very competitive series.
I agree. I'm going with those 4. You know, I'd like to pick maybe one upset, and if I had to pick one team that's going to lose in that round, I'd say it's Orlando. I just don't think the Hawks can beat them. Maybe if the Knicks, you know, get hot and show that they can hang with the big boys, maybe they get into 5 seed and knock off Orlando, maybe.
Orlando scares me. A radio guy said it perfectly. They're fool's gold.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I wouldn't take them past round 2. I know that much.
That trade for Gilbert was the dumbest trade I've ever seen.
It was a desperation move, basically.
It was terrible.
All right, so let's finish the East while we're there. So Scott, who do you like going to the finals, conference finals, and then who wins that?
Oh, I definitely think the conference finals are going to be Celtics Heat. And as great a series as it is, I'm going to take experience over athleticism, and I think the Celtics are going to make it back to the finals.
Okay, Matt?
I'm also going to go with that same matchup and with the same victor, just because I always lean towards Boston.
All right, Andrew?
Celtics-Bulls, and I think that Boston would pull it out.
I'm with you. I think the Bulls upset Miami. I think Miami is a year away from being deep enough to really make that charge. I think
this was the test. This was the test.
Yes, I agree.
The next one is the real deal.
Yep, I agree. So when they get a few more pieces, to help surround LeBron, Bosch, and Wade. So I'm gonna go Chicago, Boston, and Chicago's gonna give them a scare, but I think Boston makes it back. And I think this is their swan song year. I think this is after this. I think guys are gonna start to break down a little bit, and they're gonna have to start. I know they went all out. They had a chance to maybe let Pierce go and maybe let Ray Allen go and try and, you know, make some trades. Maybe there were rumors that they were going to go after Carmelo, but they decided to keep the core together. And as of right now, it looks like a good move. But I think, you know, this is really pretty much it.
And that's another intrigue about the potential lockout is the fact that if you're the owner of the Celtics, the Lakers, the Miami Heat, and maybe the San Antonio Spurs, do you really want to lose a season?
Exactly.
I mean, that's going to be a real tough pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
Because you lose a season where you don't have too many fresh legs anymore. And let me tell you now, if there's a lockout and we come back from lockout, the Celtics are going to be they're going to look a lot like Jeff Van Gundy's Knicks. They're going to look like a Knicks team that's just dragging their feet.
Oh, who knows? Maybe a year off will give Garnett some more spring in his knees. But all right, let's go. Let's hit the West, Scott. Who do you like to make the second round? Just go right through second round conference finals and then finals.
All right, I like the Spurs, Dallas. I like the top four. I like San Antonio, Dallas, the Lakers, and Oklahoma City. And I think the finals will be Spurs Lakers. And I think just like they did in Game 7 in 2002 at Arco Arena, I think the Lakers will persevere and they will beat the Spurs in Game 7 at the AT&T Center and go back to the finals.
All right, Matt.
I'm actually going to go with the same four that he picked to go with the second round. But for the finals, I'm going to go with the Lakers and the Thunder. With the Lakers going to the finals as well.
Okay. Andrew?
Are we going all the way through to the finals on this one?
Yep. Go all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah. Spurs Lakers in the second round. And I'll say the Blazers and the Mavericks in the second round. I think it's going to be the Lakers and the Mavericks. For all of their most recent 10 years, the Lakers and the Mavericks have never played each other in the playoffs.
It's pretty amazing.
So they're going to have to do it. You know, it's like Cena and Orton. Oh, wait, no. We've seen Cena and Orton 35 times.
So but, for that to happen, though, who do you like? You think the Lakers drop down to four?
I think that they go to three and that the – wait.
Yeah, because right now Dallas, LA is 2-3, so I think they'd play in the second round.
Well, you know what? Yeah, you know what? I might have to mix it up. That was a brain fart of mine. I'd say if the 4-5 winner, it would probably be the Spurs and the Blazers, and then it would be the Lakers and the Thunder again. Or the Lakers and the Mavs.
Yeah, it'd be Lakers and Mavs around two.
The Mavs are. I think the Mavs will beat the Lakers. I think the Lakers are a little bit down, and I think the Spurs would beat the Blazers. And then you got the Spurs and the Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals, and I'll take the Spurs.
Yeah, I'm pretty much going the same as you, except I think the Thunder beat the Blazers, and I think the top four advance. I could maybe see the Lakers getting by Dallas, but I think Dallas would wear them down enough where the Spurs would be able to defeat them. And I'm going Boston Spurs in the finals as well.
We say it every year with elite teams who kind of lag it at the end of the regular season, but the Lakers really do worry me.
Yeah, they look worn down. I was telling Scott this actually this weekend when I saw him. I just think there's so many miles of that odometer for that team. You know, playing in three straight finals, that's a lot of playoff games.
And Kobe Bryant played in the Redeem team, too.
Exactly.
I mean, he's exhausted.
Exactly. They just played a ton of games, and at some point, they're just going to collapse, and I think we're starting to see it, especially with Phil Jackson kind of winding down as well there. So let's just quick around who's going to win the title, Scott?
I should flip a coin. I think, you know, maybe it's just the sentimentalist in me, but I think you have to see the rubber match Because if there is a – I think if there is a lockout and they don't play next year, I think what better last finals to see for a while than the Lakers and Celtics. They bring the ratings. It's all about history. And I can't – it's hard to pick a winner. Because if the Celtics have the home court, I mean, I don't know if I could see the Lakers winning a game. I think it'd go seven again. I think you'll see a very slow series. I can't go against my colors. I would just take the Lakers to win a game seven. But I think this is their. I think this is both teams' swan song. Just on a side note, I think if the Lakers and Celtics, it's either gonna be the Lakers and Celtics together, or neither of them are gonna make it. I don't think you'll see one make it, not the other. I just think that's the way destiny's gonna be. I think it's either gonna be Lakers, Celtics, or Heat, Spurs. But okay. I'm gonna stick with Lakers, Celtics, and I like the Lakers winning Game Seven.
Interesting, Matt.
I'm not going with sentimental. I think the Celtics will destroy the Lakers in six games.
Okay. Andrew?
Celtics over Spurs in six games.
I'm going to go with the I'm going against the home team here. I'm going to take the Spurs. I think this is their – I think it's Tim Duncan's final run. I think they beat the Celtics. They'll have the home court advantage. The Spurs crowd is always tremendous there. And I think Duncan gets one last title. And then I don't know if he retires this year, but it's coming. It's coming soon.
Yeah.
And Manu Ginobili is having a tremendous season.
And like Scott brought up with the Spurs, they usually won their titles in down years. I'm really interested to see. I mean, this is going to be the real test. I don't think that 05 Pistons team was a really great team. I just think that they were very good in a down year in that specific – in the league specifically for that year. I want to see if the San Antonio Spurs, in terms of legacy, can defeat a great team in the NBA Finals. I want to see if they can do it.
It'll be interesting. That's definitely a good subplot. So let's go around quick too, and let's just do MVP for the year. Scott.
This is tough. I'm gonna pick a dark horse. I don't know if he'll win it, but I like Amari Stoudemire. I think getting single handedly, in my opinion, getting the Knicks to this point. And Carmelo, to me, is just gravy. What Amari has done for the Knicks is similar to what Barkley did for the Suns in 93. I mean, he just completely turned the franchise around just by going there. So I'm picking an upset pick, and I like Amari to win the MVP.
Matt?
I'm going with Derrick Rose. He's having a phenomenal year, and I actually think they could – if anyone's going to dethrone Boston from going to the finals, it's going to be them.
Andrew?
Derrick Rose is my MVP. I will say, if Kevin Love didn't exist, LeBron James is the defensive player of the year.
I think LeBron, you know, I think you could definitely make a solid argument for him being MVP. I think he's going to get hosed, just because I think people are going to go against him for the way everything went down and the way he left Cleveland and went to Miami, whether it's fair or not. It's just one of those things. I think it'll be held against him. So I think Derrick Rose does. I think he's going to slip in and win it, especially if Chicago can finish in one of those top two spots in the East. The way they're gelling right now and really coming along, you know, he's the glue that holds them together and really gets things going. So I think I definitely think he'll end up being the MVP, only because I think LeBron and Wade, Brosh, you know, they're all kind of split a little bit, and then just the backlash against LeBron will cost him.
It's hard to vote against a guy who's 26-7-7.
Exactly.
That's hard.
It is. So, with that said, anyone have any final thoughts before we wrap up? You know, maybe one last thing you're kind of looking forward to, or, you know, something we haven't touched on that you think is going to happen, or any just last thoughts in general, Scott?
I wish that the Clippers actually had a better record, because I would love to see a seven-game series between Blake Griffin and Kevin Durant. But I don't think we'll see it this year. Hopefully we'll see it in the future.
Matt?
I would actually love to see the Detroit Pistons go on a run and actually see if they can make the playoffs.
Andrew?
I think it'll be interesting to see if the Bulls could actually make a run and get the number one seed in the East and kind of pull the rug out from under Boston and Miami.
I agree. I think that's a very interesting plot to watch. The other one, I think, is that bottom of that Western Conference. Can Memphis and Phoenix sneak in? And if they do, can any of those bottom four teams pull off what would be a pretty big upset? You know, Portland, Oklahoma City's pretty balanced, but I think after Oklahoma City's run last year, I think if they were to lose in the first round, it'd be looked at as a pretty big disappointment, you know, for the fans and for the league. So I think there's a lot of pressure on them, really. If they could ever get to the three seed, you know, behoove them, obviously, quite a bit. But if not, I think, you know, there would be a pretty big disappointment to lose in the first round. So a lot of good subplots, and I want to thank you guys. I think this was a really fun chat. You know, the way we were going, I think we could go for, you know, 4 or 5 hours, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm sorry about the cutout right there.
No, it's fine. It was great. I think we all had a good time, hopefully, and I think we'll have to do this again maybe, you know, before the final start, and then we'll do another off-season one, maybe talk some draft. But Andrew, you will be back with us in a few weeks. We're going to do our March Madness prediction. We're hoping to do it actually the night that the brackets come out, after the release. Maybe we'll come on and we'll all kind of, you know, go through our own brackets and give some predictions and talk about snubs and, you know, go from there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love March Madness. It's going to be hard to find snubs this year, though.
It is.
Well, they deserve to be in. They beat LaSalle.
Yeah. You know, LaSalle definitely have a good year. And also, you know, there's a lot of rumor now that the Big East could get 11 teams in. So who knows? we'll have to see where that leads. But so that's it. You know, I want to thank our Matt Rotella, who's our regular, you know, co-host here, that's going to be joining us, and Scott, as always. We will be back next week. We'll be moving on to WrestleMania 3. We'll also have our interview. Hopefully, we're going to be scheduling that soon with John Walters. So if anyone has any questions for John, he has spent time in Ring of Honor. He spent time in WWF or WWE. He did do the first round of Tough Enough. You know, when that show first started, he went through that. He made the final cut. So, you know, he's got a lot of experience in a lot of different promotions around the country, currently in Lucha Libre USA. So if you have any questions for John, let us know, and we will ask them when we talk to him. And other than that, just stay tuned. Keep on listening. The feedback has been tremendous. We want to thank you for that. You keep us going. And with that said, I'm Justin Rosero, and Scott's going to play us out here. Hopefully it works this time.